right, welcome back to Vanessa's Cafe podcast. This is my second episode, and today we have Sangay with us. Sangay, welcome.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Doing good. So Sangay's choice for today was boba tea. So my intent was to actually have it delivered here to our location. However, there aren't apparently enough boba tea places around in the Marietta area.
Disrespectful. That's all I have to say.
So we kind of had to wing it. If for the viewers that are not familiar, boba tea is also known as bubble milk or pearl tea. It's a base drink originating in Taichung, Taiwan in the early 1980s that includes chewy tapioca balls or a wide range of other toppings. So boba, or it's called pearls also.
My personal favorite is actually the lychee or lychee. I probably say that wrong, but they use it and they do like little chunks of the lychee in it. And instead of the boba, because the boba could be a little bit chewy if you're not used to it. But yeah, the lychee jelly ones. Oh. Delicious.
I'm not very familiar. My girls, love, you know.
Well, it's an anime thing too. So they watch a lot of anime, so they see it a lot in there, and that's probably where they got that from. But yeah, I think that's probably the first place that I saw it. And the first time I had it, I was like, oh, because initially I started off with Thai tea, which is basically, I don't even know what Thai tea is. It's just something I drink. I can't tell you what's in it. I just know it's a unique flavor, so you're not gonna like it. It kind of reminds me of carrot juice that we do in Jamaica with the condensed milk in it. But I like that a lot. And then from that, I jumped into like actual boba.
Awesome.
So, there we go.
Well, I love trying different things, so I'm excited about trying this with you. We just happen to have some at our house, so my girls made this for us to drink. Okay. So you just mentioned Jamaica, so I want to jump right into that. Tell our viewers where you are from.
Well, I was originally born in Jamaica, as you know. I lived there in Manchester, the province of Manchester. I lived there until I was about 11 years old, and then I moved to the States. I was in Maryland for a pretty good chunk of time, went to Pennsylvania, decided that the cold was not for me, and then ended up here in Georgia.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what was the biggest adjustment you experienced moving from Jamaica to the USA?
So at the age I was, I think the biggest adjustment was the weather. Because when I came to the States, it was like the middle of summer. I think it was like in July. So I thought it was going to be the same. Because if you've been in Jamaica, it's hot. It can be a little bit humid, but it's a very dry heat. We don't get winter. The most that we get is hail. So we don't get snow or any of that. That doesn't happen. We're right between the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn. So that area does not allow for snow. So when I came here and then the first winter came and I like ran outside like, oh, this is so beautiful. And then I was like, oh, what is this? And it started like, you know, when something gets so cold, it starts to burn. I was like, okay, wait a minute. Like, what the heck is this? And why? Like, I thought this was great. But that was probably the biggest adjustment, is getting used to winter, because I'm always cold. You know that, consistently, all the time. So it was just like, all right, I can't be in this environment for too long. But outside of that, because I was so young, I was immersed into the culture because of school. So I didn't really have that disparity of coming here as an older person and then being like, oh, everything here is so different. So I think that probably was my biggest adjustment.
Gotcha. So why Maryland?
Well, so my dad came here. He was doing farm work, which is literally like working on a farm and doing different things. So my uncles were over, and one of my aunts. So I had some people who went to New Jersey. I had an uncle who was in Maryland. He actually had thought about moving to New Jersey and going there, but then changed his mind because my other uncle was down here in Maryland. So he's like, okay, the work was here in Maryland. So he stayed and started a home there. I'm glad he didn't go to Jersey. No offense, Jersey, but I don't think I would have want to grow up in Jersey.
Okay, so what did you like better about the United States, and what did you find more challenging? I mean, again, like, you know, thinking of an 11-year-old.
So I think as I look back as a kid, I think one of the things that are the most that I like the most about being in the States is accessibility. You have access to everything. You literally could go outside and go to the grocery store and get anything that you want. And to be able to, if you were like, oh, I decided I'm going to make macaroni and cheese, or I'm going to make the spaghetti pasta, there's a grocery store within a few miles of you in most cases, unless you live in like rural areas, that you can go pick up all the ingredients you need and you're good to go. The accessibility is not the same in Jamaica. The marketplace is not the same. Like if you're going to go, a lot of people, one, don't have vehicles. So you're taking a taxi into town, however far that is to get to a store. The local like little shops that they have is just like perishable things for the most part. And unless you have a food vendor that's going to be selling a lot of fresh food, most people grow their own stuff. So like my granddad was a farmer, so he grew a lot of the stuff at our home, and we had animals and things like that. So it's just the accessibility to everything, like whether it's TV, be the internet, things like that. Shoot, even now to this day, Jamaica still doesn't have like a regular phone plan. You literally have to buy minutes.
Oh, wow.
Like legit. And I'm like, that's crazy that they still have not been able to transition to that. But it's accessibility. So it makes it so much harder for the people to do what they want to do because they don't have access in the way that they need. What about for you from your like, because I know you didn't grow up here in the States. Like when you transitioned from like, how old were you when you came to the States?
20. I was almost 20.
Yeah. So they're definitely probably was a cultural shift. So
at first I was like taken back because in Germany or in Europe in general, you can like, you know, smoke and drink at a young age legally. So, so when I moved to the States, I'm like, wait a minute, I can't buy alcohol anymore.
They were like, yeah, so we need like, another year.
I have to wait a whole year to buy alcohol legally again. Like, and then I felt like a criminal sneaking, you know, liquor and stuff when I had just been drinking, you know, for a long time. Because
it's what, 16 or 18? In Germany, 16 for cigarettes.
I don't know if the laws have changed as of recent, but it used to be 16 for cigarettes and then 18 for alcohol. But I mean, if you could get into a club, then, you know, they don't card at the bars. So once you get into a club at even 16, which you legally can go to a club at 16 until 12:30, if they don't card you at the door, if you can sneak in without them carding you, then you can stay in there all night long. Nobody's going to notice.
Oh, do they put a wristband on you or something if you're underage?
No, they take your ID.
Oh, OK.
So but once you get in, you can go to the bar and get a drink at 16 years old. No one's going to ask you how old you are. But at 12:30, you're supposed to go back to the counter, get your ID and then go.
OK.
But what some of us have done, or most people do, is they pretend like they left and forgot to stop at the counter.
Feel like
and
come back the next
in.
Day.
They come back the next day and say, hey, I left at 12:30 last night, but I forgot to stop in and get my ID. But, you know, technically they left at like 4 or 5 in the morning. But so once you get in, you can drink. But I feel that people, because it's like, it's not so restricted, people actually are not like,
they're more responsible.
Yes. There's a lot more responsible drinkers. There's not a lot of like, I mean, I know of people like probably a little pushing the envelope and driving, you know, while they had a few drinks or whatever. But you don't see a lot of what's happening over here, you know, like you
said. Well, the more you restrict something is the more people want it. Because you think back to like Prohibition era, obviously way before our time. But that was the time when people were like, give us the alcohol. It was like this thing where they didn't really want it that much before. But as soon as somebody was like, hey, so no, you can't have this anymore. It went crazy. Like we almost got into a freaking civil war in and of itself because people couldn't get alcohol.
True story. Like when I was bartending for a while in Germany before I moved to the States, and this guy comes to the bar at like 9 p.m. Right, the bar had just opened. He comes to the bar. He had just left some kind of Chinese restaurant, and he was in the military, just shipped out to Germany after basic training. So now he has like access. He's 19 years old. He has access to alcohol, right? So he orders like 3 double shots or something like that of an alcohol, right? And like the second time he ordered, I was like, I don't think you should be drinking this fast. You know, there was like barely anyone in the bar at the time, but he was like, no, I want another double shot and another double shot. So I gave him like, I think I sold him like three, maybe right within like an hour. And of course, back then also, he's
trying to get
lit. Hey, listen, he fell asleep on the bar. And he was gone. Like, he was done for the rest of the night. And the party hadn't even started yet. But he was just like, oh, I finally have access to alcohol. And it's kind of like, and you don't really see stuff like that. It was typically always like the people that were from overseas.
Yeah, that would act out.
That would act out, right?
No, it makes sense.
I just thought it was so funny because within the first 30 minutes, he was already sleeping. I'm like, oh, wow, what a waste of your night, you know?
Basically. Yeah. Hopefully he didn't get in trouble for not getting back to base on time.
Right. Oh, no. Back then, no. Especially if it was like a Friday or Saturday night. Oh,
okay, they wouldn't have to get back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not as strict as like, you know, other places like Korea and stuff, you know, okay, where they have a specific curfew and stuff. In Germany, no. Okay. Unless they were like certain things going on, they typically were fine.
Okay.
But so I would say that was one of the things. And then as a negative part, but as a positive, was the accessibility, like you mentioned. Although there's a lot of different stores and places to go and shop in Germany, everything shuts down at a specific time. And then on Sunday, a lot of places are closed. So you have to like get whatever you need, you know, during the week by 7-8 o'clock. Grocery stores close, you know, the only thing that remains open are like gas stations.
Yeah.
So, you know, coming here and seeing that I can like shop late at night or go to like Walmart and it's open 24 hours. I had never seen anything like that before.
And the something that I just thought of too is like when we have that accessibility, we are a little bit more lax in the matter of what we deal with it, or we get so used to it that when it's taken away, mm-hmm, that we're like, what do you mean I can't go into Walmart right now? Like when the whole pandemic started and stores started to change their hours and stuff, people were like legit like upset that they couldn't, mm-hmm, go in. And it's like, this is a special circumstance, I think. But once you have something to take it away is a lot more than never having it and never understanding. So that gain, that loss of it is felt a little bit more. So,
right. Yeah.
It's craziness.
Yeah.
But from the negative side, though, I think I didn't tell you the negative.
Yeah.
From being in the States, I think for me, at that young age, I don't think I really saw potentially outside of like the weather being a negative. But as I'm growing up, I think one of the things that I've noticed is the way that the separation of the family unit, in a way, unless you really, mm-hmm, try hard to stay together with your family, you're not going to be as close because everyone has their own life. They're moving away to different cities, different towns and things like that. And in Jamaica, you literally live with your family until, mm-hmm, you get married. And then even when you get married, you're either staying with your family, mm-hmm, or going to their family's house. So the family unit is a little bit more preserved in that sense, but it's so much easier in the States to lose sight of family and to lose that connection.
I agree. I'm kind of like dreading the day that, you know, my girls graduate from high school and
go off to college.
I don't want them like to leave, but I know I left my, you know, family to come like to the United States. But my siblings still live in the same city, 10, 15 minutes away from my mom. So there's like, they've remained there, you know? So now that I am a parent to a mom and my girls are like close to being adults, that definitely is, you know, a little worrisome.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll cross that bridge
when you get to it.
Yeah. Okay. So what I admire about you is all the random and fun facts you know. What has spiked that interest and how do you look up information?
So I think one of the core parts of who I am and what drives me is knowledge. It is very it's very important to me to be able to learn to understand. So when it comes to a situation, like if you show me something, I just don't want to see it. I want to understand how it works. I want to understand where it came from, things like that. I've always just had that drive to know, to understand, to learn, and then from that to teach. So I think that's just always been a core part of who I am. And mm-hmm. that's what drives me to like look up things and random facts. And I'll be like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Like, I just found out yesterday that caffeine is technically a toxin, and it is what plants produce to protect themselves. And I was like, wait, we're drinking toxins? That's why you're not supposed to drink too much caffeine, because it technically can be toxic to you. Mm-hmm. And then I saw that something had cyanide in it. And I was like, it has cyanide? But all of these things that we consume, that nature has these natural things. Oh, cherry pits. If you bite into a cherry pit, inside the actual cherry pit, cyanide or whatever it is that creates cyanide is inside of it. So you have to be careful. Obviously, no one should be eating cherry pits in general. Mm-hmm. But I learned that yesterday because I was just randomly looking something up and I was like, oh, I didn't know that. But that's how it starts. Like I see something and it just stems me to look something up. And then I get uh-huh. into this cycle of searching for all these random things. But that's just how I've always been.
If I ever hear something like that's kind of like off the wall or random, I'm like, I bet you Senge knows this. Like, I mean, that's just so cool. I feel like you're just like full of information, like useful information, interesting.
Oh, yeah, stuff. There's a lot of not useful information in my head as well. I can say that. Like sometimes I'm talking to James. I'm like, did you know? And he's like, yeah, I didn't, but not really something I don't think I needed to know. I'm like, look, one day a random fact that I tell you is going to be useful. You just wait.
Yeah. So in my opinion, you are the cool aunt that every kid wants to have. You connect with the young generation very well. So I'd like to know how you connect with the youth, or I guess, you know, you share a lot of interests that you do.
So one, I'm a kid at heart. I've been a kid at heart. I was watching Phineas and Ferb like 4 years ago. So it's like I'm 30 plus years old at this point, but it's very easy for me to put myself in the shoe of the person I'm having a conversation with. And I think it's the reason why it's so easy for me to build connections, because mm-hmm. I can find a similarity with that person and use that similarity to kind of build that bond and build that relationship. Mm-hmm. From the perspective of the girls, like, it's easy to talk to them and have conversations with them because they're interested. They have things that they want to talk about. They have thoughts. They're independent. They're unique in the way that they are. So if I can find something in that I have similarities with, and I use that to build that relationship. And I think that stems not only with younger kids, but just across the board with anyone that I meet. I, mm-hmm. I don't feel like in most cases I've ever really truly met a stranger. Even the people that I may find the most abhorrent, there is probably one thing that I could find within them that I could connect with and use that to build a relationship.
That's so awesome.
And I, you know, it's funny. I was talking to James about it, like mm-hmm. the quote unquote gift of gab, the ability to do that. Like for me, it's normal.
Yeah.
I never realized that wasn't something that everyone could do, like to just be able to talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, a lot of people just can't talk to people. Like you put them in a room with strangers and they'll just stand there and say nothing because they don't know how to kind of initiate or build that bridge. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, whatever, strangers. All right, cool.
I think because you do so much research, or because you are so full of knowledge, it's easier for you to connect with people. And you're not from here. You're from Jamaica. So you have like a broader prospect, or, you know, like you just, you think differently. You know what I mean? Yeah. Okay.
But I think you have that same thing too. I know we want to move forward, but I think you have that same thing as well.
Yeah, it's easy for me. It's really hard. And I think that even like, you know, working in the hospitality industry kind of forces you to kind of step into that as well, where you look for things to connect, make a personal connection with.
Especially when you're in a situation where mm-hmm. they may be, it's going left and you're trying to bring it to, like you have somebody who's checking in, mm-hmm. who's having a bad check-in experience and you're trying to find a connection. Mm-hmm. So maybe you see their kid and you start talking about that and then that brings back that positive. So yeah, definitely get that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Awesome. So what advice would you give to the youth or the next generation?
Looking at the younger generation and the things that they're doing, I think that they're ahead of the game with certain things that we were not. They are a little bit more socially aware. Mm-hmm. They are a lot more willing to speak up and say, hey, just because my parents think this doesn't mean that's how I have to think as well. But what I see is there is a level of also entitlement to things and a level of sensitivity that is being built into that generation where they're getting everything is a problem, or the world is supposed to change to fit exactly how they think it should be. And the truth of the matter is the world is not going to change to make you happy in all instances. There's always going to be people. There's always going to be circumstances in which you are not happy or you don't like, and you have to learn to accept the fact that while you may not be in agreement with everything that you see out in the world, obviously if it's something that's harmful or things along those lines, I'm not speaking to those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But just because you, like, for example, I think I saw an instance where someone was like, I don't like the fact that they display like these kinds of things in the store. And it's like, yeah, you may not like that, but it's not for you. Somebody likes it. And if you go around just looking for things you don't like that you want to change, you're always going to be unhappy.
Right.
So learn to find a balance between what is truly things that you value and things that you want to fight for and things that don't matter enough for you to spend your energy on, because then you're just going to spend your whole life fighting a battle that you're never going to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is so true. I definitely love they have like this globe mindset is what mm-hmm. I call it.
It's not just the me-centric thought.
Yeah, yeah. And they are researching and looking up information, and they are learning so much more. And they, you know, like I used to tell people I'm from Bosnia and people would be like, Boston? I'm like, no, I just said Bosnia. How did you hear Boston?
Uzbekistan?
Yeah. Where is that? You know, and then I have to explain, well, it's across from Italy and above Greece. It's a small country, you know, divided, blah, blah, blah. But now I say, hey, I'm from Bosnia. And people are like, oh, yeah, I've heard of Bosnia, you know.
It's probably
and
it's from like, the Taken movies.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that, but... Maybe, but also just because people are educating themselves more or they are traveling more abroad. Like I'm seeing more people like vacationing in Croatia and mm-hmm. stuff. Like there's a lot of like highlighting going on yeah. on like these like hidden gems, I would right. say. But yeah, so just that difference between, you know, when I initially moved and would tell people where I was from or originally from, or, and now it's like, oh, and then like, I've seen like even screenshots going around, like people I actually like acknowledging, you know, so I'm like really excited.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I just love like that they're also like, you know, for instance, with like the Black Lives Matter movement last year, you saw like all these different countries like kind of joining in and marching and stuff. And that was like, that was so great.
It's
right?
different. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the connection. Well, mm-hmm. one, you have a couple of things. You have. Yeah. You have a global view because everyone has a camera.
Right.
Everyone can record what's going on. Everyone can see what's going mm-hmm. on, and it can get from here in the States right now to somewhere in Europe within 5 seconds. So you have that ability mm-hmm. to just get information out. But also I think one of the key differences between say my generation and the younger generations, we were taught to accept what an adult said as law and fact 100% and not to question.
Oh yeah.
We were taught you go to school, you get an education, you do what you're told, you follow these bylaws, you go to work, you follow the rules of your work, you follow the rules of life, quote unquote. And to a certain degree, we are now in a way teaching our kids like, hey, you should question, you should ask questions. While you shouldn't be disrespectful, you should still be like, hey, that doesn't necessarily make sense. Can you show me where, or can you look at different mm-hmm. sources of information and try to put it all together? And I think that that is enabling them to see a broader worldview. Because I was looking, I was listening to this YouTube channel yesterday. I can't remember the name of the gentleman, but he was talking about how in private schools, the textbooks teach slavery as Black immigration, like legitimately Black immigration. Now, imagine the amount of kids who are learning to think of slavery as just a monetary thing that was an immigration of Black people. Mm-hmm. If those individuals only ever listen to what they're taught in those textbooks, they will grow up and see African Americans in a very finite view. And if they question, they'll be like, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Like, why, if it was about this, then, and make those connections themselves, then they will be more open. They will be less likely to be prejudiced and less likely to grow up to be what we see reflected in a lot of folks right now.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of things that I appreciate and I look for there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of misinformation.
Well, history is being rewritten.
Yeah.
History is written by the victor. So there's so many things about history that we believe, like Columbus is not a hero. Like Christopher Columbus committed mass genocide of the indigenous population of the West Indies. He killed hundreds of thousands and thousands of people. He's an idiot because the globe was already around at the time that he's talking about the world is round. Mm-hmm. No, duh. We know the world is round. Mm-hmm. Thanks, like Captain Obvious.
Yeah.
But because the person who wrote his story was like, oh, I can't make this guy look like an idiot. I have to rewrite it to make it look like he's not an idiot. Who's going to come up and be like, well, technically Columbus didn't do that if everyone in it is dead.
Right, right, right.
And the fact that you have Columbus Day to celebrate some douchebag who was just a mass murderer.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't. So you see how I feel about Columbus Day. But I'm just saying, it's legitimate. But that's the kind of thing. Most kids grow up thinking, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Yeah, well, he's an idiot. And he thought he was in India. And that's why they called him Indians. And he's stupid. So there you go.
You know, in our history class, I think the United States was like the shortest
section
of our history. Yeah. We spent like a year and a half on Hitler's regime and a lot of back like the Rome and the Vikings and all that. I don't remember half of it, but it was just like information overkill for me. I was just not very interested, but very little on American history. Very little.
Yeah. One thing I appreciated about Germany from the people who I know that had either gone through German education is they did not shy away from talking about Nazism. They didn't shy away from talking about Hitler and the wrong that they did as a nation. They accepted it and they said, this is wrong. This was wrong. These people were vile for the things that they did. If you look at American history, America tries to sugarcoat slavery. It tries to sugarcoat what it did to the Chinese Americans. It tried to sugarcoat what it did to Irish Americans. It really tries to make it like, oh, no, it wasn't that bad. We saved them. Like, it was because of us that they had these positive things. So it's always a consistent theme is that it doesn't always want to accept the wrong that they did. And if you accept the wrong that you did and say, hey, this was wrong, but this is not where we are anymore. We've worked through this, but we want to make sure we never forget it. It would be a lot better than always just trying to sugarcoat it and make it seem like, oh, no. It didn't happen like that exactly. Like we had a reason.
Yeah.
Cool.
What is your take on how this country is structured to support minorities and women in particular?
I think this country is structured to keep in most cases, unless it is someone who has a strong will and a strong mind, to to somewhat, especially in like the 90s and the 2000s, keep them in their place. You have a place that, or a stereotype of what a woman is, and you're supposed to do these certain things and you're supposed to live this certain way. The idea that if a woman doesn't want kids, it's like the biggest thing in the world. Like, what? You don't want kids? Oh, you're going to change your mind. Oh, when you get older, oh, your biological clock is going to tick. Or if a woman is the breadwinner in the household and she's the one making money, and the husband decides to stay home because his job wasn't making as much money, so he's like, you know, I'll stay home and do all the household things, then he is considered less of a man because of it, because that's a woman's place to some people. It's set up, it's changing, but it's set up to be where if you do not fit into the archetype, if you don't fit into the stereotype, if you don't fit into the built-in setting that the quote-unquote patriarchy has created, then you are either not woman enough, you are not womanly, and you are going against the grain. And because of that, you are not looked at as well. And one of the things I was talking to a friend about, having emotions and having the ability to connect and being connected to, let's say at work, if you're a woman at work who has the ability to connect and build relationships and you're super positive and things along those lines, it's considered a weakness. Because then people are going to walk all over you. You are a doormat. If a man has those same qualities, then it's seen as, oh, he's so relatable. It's so easy for him to connect with people. That's such a great strength. That's going to help him get far. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the things that are considered to be quote unquote feminine are negatives. And then if a woman is quote unquote masculine, if she's aggressive, if she's assertive, or rather not necessarily aggressive, but if she's assertive, then she's aggressive. But if a man is aggressive, then it's, oh, he's only being assertive. So it's not set up for us to be seen in a certain light. It's set up for us to stay in a lane that we no longer choose to stay in. And as we grow out of that, we're seeing those differences happen. That's why you have things like the Me Too movement and all these things happening, because women have been taught for so long, don't say anything, you're going to ruin your career, let it go. Oh, it's just how men are. It's just a situation. You're just going to have to deal with it. And now we're like, no, we don't have to deal with it. Now, at the end of the day, I do think that there are some people within those realms that are taking advantage of the system. Mm-hmm. So I'm not the kind of person that's going to sit there and say, oh, every single instance of all of these are right, because I do see the damage that's done to innocent men as well. So I would never want to disregard that. But the majority is still, these are terrible things that happen to women that they consistently have to accept. And the way the system is set up is not for them to be helped in the way that they should be helped.
Just to kind of add to that is that when, if you're a minority, it's like an additional whammy.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. I have to be conscious of the fact that if I get angry, I'm an angry Black woman. Mm-hmm. If I get upset and act out, it's more likely that I'm going to be seen as the aggressor or the one who's in the wrong when either the police come or someone of authority comes, because of the stereotypes that are presented of me in the media, in movies, and everything. Mm-hmm. The biases that are built into our society makes it that I am more likely going to be the one in the wrong. And I have to essentially dig myself out of a hole to even get to ground level. Whereas some people just start at the top.
Right, right, right. Just really hope that things, you know, change.
I think it's changing. I don't think it's going to be like, oh, in our lifetime where we're really going to see the full fruition of it. Mm-hmm. It is changing. And I think it's partly because of the younger generation and some of the things that they are unwilling to accept and some of the things that they're willing to speak out mm-hmm. about. But for me, I believe very much in fairness.
Yeah, me
and
too.
For me, while I want us to get to a point where women get the things that they need and are treated in the way that they need to be treated, that to me does not mean that men need to be in the negative because of it. I think we can get to a place where we have a balance where both genders get what they need. But if I have to step on all of these men to get to the top, then I don't feel like that is the way that I want to do it, because then we become the enemy that we don't want to be. Mm-hmm. You see, mm-hmm. like they say, I think it's like a comic book thing. They say the long enough that you're a hero, you eventually become the villain. I may be misquoting that, but you're fighting a fight for so long that eventually you become what you're fighting. Mm-hmm. And so I never want that to be a part of who I am when dealing with these issues. And that's why I'm always very cautious of how quickly I jump into things and are like, no, all this or all that. I'm not like mm-hmm. that monolithic in my thought process around it. I could see the different aspects to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Okay. Have you tried yet?
I'm like, let me try my boba.
Yeah, try it. If you need any flavoring, there's some behind you.
No, it's actually pretty good. She had me try it upstairs earlier and it was good.
Okay. I don't know what you typically add. Like, I guess, because you had mentioned you wanted some like Earl Grey.
So this one, the one that I specifically wanted to the place that would not deliver, it was an it was an Earl Grey with lavender, but it had the tapioca balls. And then this new thing that they're doing in boba is that they have the poppable flavors. So like they'll have a mango flavor inside. And when it's in your mouth, it pops and you get the infusion of the flavor it. So I was being extra. But normally you just usually can get like a Thai tea with tapioca or something simple like that.
Gotcha. I'll have to like maybe drive up to the location.
And be like, let's try this. The girls would probably appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so one of the topics that we really wanted to discuss today was mental health, right? So define mental health and how this past year has impacted you.
So for me, in as brief as I can be, because, mm-hmm. you know, I talk a lot. Mental health to me is the ability to regulate, to understand, to look at and to work through your emotional, your mindset and your emotions in general. Like, am I able to feel something and understand the source of where it's coming from to see if it's something that's truly something that I should be worried about? Like, is this truly a feeling for me, or am I projecting my feelings or my thoughts on others? Am I being overly sensitive? Am I not being sensitive enough and allowing somebody to walk over me? Am I in a place where I just feel like I'm never good enough? Am I in a place where my esteem is low? Am I in a place where I don't want to do anything at all? And maybe I'm in a state of depression, or am I always in this high mm-hmm. and projecting this into the world, but that's truly not the core of who I am. So it's really just I want to say it's the ability just to understand your inner workings of your mind and how that impacts your day to day. And I think especially for me, like, I'm a social person in general, but I do have those times where I'm just like, all right, I don't want people around. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to to go away. Mm-hmm. But I'm a very social person and I build connections very easily. But one thing I notice about myself is I build connections, but I don't always maintain them as well as I want to. And I know that probably has things to do with things in my past and how I've had relationships before, how they've ended. So I'm like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't really build this relationship because it's going to end anyway. So I might as well just let it trickle off. So being able to understand my past experiences, I think, is going to help me be able to make better future decisions on the things that I do. With the pandemic and with everything going on, I have come to realize that I need to focus on my mental health. I've had at least 3-4 instances within the last year and a half where I've lost a family or a friend. And I know something about myself is that it's very easy for me to project to the world that I'm okay. Mm-hmm. If I could be like dead inside and I can show you the bright, happy, cheery very easily. And I realize that's because I'm so used to doing that. And culturally, and it may be for you as well, culturally, we are not taught the importance of how you feel or sharing how you feel mm-hmm. or sharing that to the world or talking to someone about it. We're taught to keep that internal, work through it. You should be strong enough, mm-hmm. and not to deal with it. And I'm realizing that I do need to deal with it. Like mm-hmm. I'm actually in the process of looking to find a therapist because there's so much in my life that is impacting me and impeding me more than anything else. Impeding my success, impeding my growth. I have my podcast, which I know we'll talk about later, mm-hmm. but I haven't made an episode in months. And why? I love it. I like doing it. I love the conversations, mm-hmm. but I'm like, oh, I'm going to fail at it anyway. So why? Like in my head, I know that's not true, but that's how I think about it. And that's not okay.
Yeah.
So how do you get out of that place if you never have a conversation with someone else to really get to the root of it?
Right.
How do you get through that? You can't get through that on your mm-hmm. own. I'm sorry. Even therapists have therapists.
Yeah.
I should tell you that you can't get through it on your own. So mental health is so important. We see that even just speaking about Simone Biles. Her getting the twisties and the mental issues. The thing that a lot of people don't understand is mental impediments can be just as daunting as physical impediments. If your brain isn't working or mm-hmm. manifesting in the way that you need it to, it can restrict you in the same way. There are people who can't walk and it's simply a mental thing.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, if your mind is that strong, mm-hmm. why would you not want to make sure you take care of it and get it to a place where it actually is working off of valid data? I'm working on an outdated hard drive that hasn't been updated in years, that is connected with strings and wires and has not been like tuned and taken care of. And I'm surviving. But is that the best way for me to function?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So I have to take care of that. And mm-hmm. that to me is how I look at mental health and why I think it's so important, especially now with just the world in chaos. You have to be strong mentally and physically within yourself to be able to survive it.
Yeah. You know, like one of the examples I want to give is that when, you know, people talk about like domestic violence yeah. or anything like that, and then they discuss, you know, physical abuse, but there's like that mental abuse too, which to me is like 100 times worse.
I completely agree.
You know, it F's with you.
No,
somebody
yeah.
F's with your head. I think, you know, and like they can make you go crazy. They can, you know, it can unleash in a lot of different ways. But, you know, mental health is extremely important.
So I have a perfect example for this, and you can probably use it in an instance to describe. Mm-hmm. When you have your hand out and someone takes a knife and they slice your wrist, you're going to see the scar. You're going to see the bleeding. Mm-hmm. As it starts to heal, you'll see that healing. You'll see it scab over. You'll see that wound pull together. You'll mm-hmm. see the fading of that. You have a physical representation to look at to say change is happening.
Yeah.
You can't do that with your mental. So when someone slices open your mental, how do you see when it's getting better? You don't.
Right.
So all you have is this idea and you can't see when it's getting better. So you're like, is it getting better? Is it not getting better? You're unsure. And in that unsureness, because I can't think of a better word to use in that moment, but in that unsureness, it makes it harder because you don't have a physical manifestation to look at and say, this is my strength. I am getting stronger. I am healing. There is change happening. It's the same thing when you're like losing weight. If you're working out and you don't see a difference, you quit. Mm-hmm. But if you're seeing those changes, you're more likely to stick with it. And that's part of the reason why I think mental manipulation and mental harm, especially in domestic abuse, is so much harder to get over because you don't have a physical thing to look at.
And it's not easy to detect.
Exactly.
You could be literally tricked into thinking, you know, that everything's okay. And then, you know, like later on, you're like, wait a minute. I was just completely, you know, talked into doing
yeah
whatever.
Abusers are yeah. very good at being yeah, abusers. Yeah, yeah. That's their
right.
That's their modus. Mm-hmm. They can't deal with a normal woman. They've said this before. I don't know the accuracy of it, but they say if you take an abuser and you put them in a room with 100 women, and one of them is someone who's susceptible to abuse, he's going to find that woman. It's because he knows what to look for. He knows if to ask certain questions. Right. And then by the responses that he gets, he's like, oh, this is somebody I can't touch with because they have a strong mental mind. Or, oh, no, this is somebody I can manipulate. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show them all the good in the world and I'm going to give them this picture, this ideal. And then I'm just going to break them down and make them know that I'm the only person that's going to be able to give them that goodness ever again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy.
Psyche of the human mind, man.
So tell our viewers about your podcast and how they can find you.
So right now you can find my podcast. I do have a website. There are levelstothischick.com and you will be able to find it there. You can also find my podcast on Spotify, Google Podcast. I believe it's also on Apple Podcast. The first 10 episodes are up. As I mentioned a little bit ago, I did take a brief hiatus to just deal with some personal things that are going on. But my goal is to start putting up some new episodes next month. I'm taking some time off and really getting into creating some more episodes because consciously I want to make sure that I'm putting out good information. And as you know, that I know what I'm talking about. So that takes a little bit of time to do the research and everything you need. So yeah, so you can find it at that. There are levelstothischick.com. I am also on Instagram if you want to follow me and Twitter, which I never use, but you're more than welcome to follow me there too.
Is it the same, the same handle?
You know, I will get that to you because I know you'll put this in post. Mm-hmm. I know your wonderful other is going to just pop it above my head somewhere around here. You'll see my Instagram handle pop up. So I appreciate it. But I'll provide that to you as well as the website link.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit more about your podcast. How did it come about and what the name? Explain the name.
I think one of the reasons why I chose the name, I went through a lot of different names, but the reason why I chose the name is there's more to me than just what you see. Like, I'm a weird girl. I'm into anime. I'm into like different things I like to learn. I will know more probably 70s and 80s songs than I should. Like, my partner tells me all the time, he's like, are you sure you're the age you are? Because you seem like you were born in the 70s. The movies that I like, the things that I do, there's more to me. I'm not a monolith. There's more to me than just my skin color or what you see. And I also wanted it to be kind of a calling card for myself. Hey, there's more to you than what you are showing right now. There's levels to you that you can build on and grow on. And I wanted it to be a platform, or I want it. And it is to me a platform where you can have conversations that you don't always see, the ability to have different perspectives that are always going to be respected, and to be able to really showcase, hey, I can think about so many different things. I could be interested in so many different things, and it's okay because that is just a part of the human experience.
Mm-hmm. Who inspires you and why?
You know, there's a lot of different people in this world that are celebrities and things like that, but I actually don't want to say a celebrity. There's one person that came into my life when I worked in Pennsylvania, and she actually was a guest at that hotel, and she's part of the reason why I moved to Atlanta, because she was here and I was looking to go somewhere and I wanted to have somewhere where there was a connection. Mm-hmm. But her strength of mind, her name is Denise. Denise King, her strength of mind, her belief in herself, her faith, and how she just, you can't tell her nothing, okay? That she does not believe in herself and continue to use that to push herself to get to the goals that she wants. She knows that she is going to be a millionaire, a multimillionaire, and you can't get to say anything to take that away from her. And I think that's the one thing that I want to be able to mimic is her strength of mind and her belief in herself and her ability to just project that out into the world and to let other people see, oh, okay, this is somebody that I need to watch. This is somebody that I need to pay attention to, because whatever she touches turns to gold. And I love that about her. I just love her strength of character and how strong-willed and how strong-minded she is.
Wow. And she's here in Atlanta? Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to invite her to my podcast.
Yeah, definitely. I could see if I could get you connected to her. She is an amazing person. She truly is. Like, she truly is.
That's really one thing I love about the hospitality industry, just the people that you meet, you know, through like you know, different walks of lives and everything. Definitely. The connections are definitely amazing, such as ours. And I'm so excited that you are here.
Yeah, I was so happy. Like going back to like when we first kind of had our conversation, and I remember I was sitting in my car outside of a hotel in some random place when you called me and offered me the job. And I was so happy. I almost started crying because even through... Because a couple of things. One, I knew that the impression that you got of me and what you were probably told about me were a little bit different. And the fact that you were willing to give me a chance and you saw me for who I was and you were like, no, that's not what I'm seeing. I see this connection and I can feel this from her. I always so much appreciated. And I was like, oh, I love her already. She seems so kind and so caring. And the connection that I built with you, no matter where you went, I was always going to keep that. And you are truly someone that I consider a friend and somebody whose spirit I love being around, because your kindness and just the way that you're always willing to help those who need it, and sometimes to your own detriment, which we got to talk about, but I love that about you. And I knew that that was a spirit and that was something I wanted to have in my life.
Oh, thank you. You're making me blush.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sengay. Thank you for blessing my podcast.
You're very welcome. I know we got to do our own episodes on mine soon enough. Yes. We'll definitely set that up. I do definitely want to talk to you and kind of have that same deep connection there.
Yes. So another episode with Sengay coming soon on her platform. So thank you again for joining us at Benissa's Cafe Podcast. This is our second episode with Sengay.
Hey, thanks for having me.